Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Banging Book Club, the fortnightly podcast where we discuss books about sex and gender. I'm Hannah Whitten.
I'm Lucy Moon.
And I'm Lena Norms.
And this month, we read, guys. We read Man Up by Jack Irwin. Cool.
We did the thing.
The reason why we picked this book in November is because sometime in November is International Men's
Day. It's November, isn't it?
Yeah. Very big deal and made about November this
and,
year.
Yeah, and it's also normally November.
Very big deal.
Maybe moustaches are just out.
Maybe the campaign lost their funding.
Maybe testicular cancer has been solved and we just haven't seen it in the media because there's been so much about Brexit.
Wow.
Maybe. Probably not.
Sunday the 19th of November
is
International Men's Day. So by the time this podcast comes out, we'll have been and gone. So good times.
So don't us pictures so of your
don't
your
forget
moustaches.
To celebrate.
Yeah.
The subtitle of this book is Surviving Modern Masculinity. And I'm going to read the blurb. Says, what does masculinity add up to in the 21st century? Jack Irwin traces modern ideas of masculinity from the inability of older generations to deal with the horrors of war to the mob mentality of football terraces or fight club and the disturbing rise of mental health problems among men, especially young men today. While we struggle with the idea that there is a single version of masculinity worth aspiring to, depression and suicide among men have reached unprecedented levels. Man Up looks at the challenges and pressures on men today and suggests ways to survive. Towards the end of this podcast, we talk a lot about suicide. So content warning, trigger warning is here for you. There you go. So Lena, you talk about it because you were the one that suggested this book.
Yeah, so I thought it would be good because I think we've read lots of books that focus on the complex nature of femininity, the good things about it and how it affects us and the expectations that we have on us. We rarely like set aside time just to talk about men's issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like hard to make space for that. And while I think like obviously women's issues are close to our hearts, I think that it's cool just to set aside 1 month to be like, men, what are they going through? And I think also what is kind of weird about books about men and masculinity is the main audiences are still kind of women. Like, yeah. Women tend to buy them more. Women tend to buy them sometimes, I think, out of an anxiety and struggling to help men understand their own gender. So I think
mm-hmm.
these books sometimes are aimed at women as much as they are men, just because of the reality that a man in conflict with his masculinity probably won't buy a book about it.
True.
So
it's aimed at their girlfriends.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. And there was this big trend of it a couple of years ago where there were loads and loads of books coming out about it.
Really?
Yeah. This happened to be one of them. I really like this one. I don't know if you guys
but the
did,
thing is that like but, even this year it's still the case, like you've got Grayson Perry's book The Descent of Man and then also this
how
year
How to Be a Boy
How Not to Be a Boy, Robert Webb, that was published this year.
Oh yeah, that's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I haven't read, yeah. But I heard a lot of things about.
I chose this one because I did enjoy it when I read it. Also because I think it goes into a lot of the facts around masculinity more than the feelings, which I think is a good place to discuss things from.
And very masculine.
Very masculine. Yeah. And it's one of the only books written by somebody our age about masculinity, because there's lots of
sure. That's what I really enjoyed
pretty
about
boring,
it.
Pretty boring journalists writing about it, who are like a different generation to us. So I think this is the one like experience that we can probably offer our own experiences up to, because we're like, we've grew up at the same time as this person.
He's that's taught, true.
He has the same like reference points rather than Grayson Perry.
Yeah.
Who, yeah.
Different reference points.
Yeah. Different reference points.
So sound reviews?
Okay, this is mine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Concise.
It has been noted. Go on.
Oh, okay, mine is...
That was a very masculine grunt.
Thank you.
I want to do something masculine.
Great.
The slow release of masculinity into a more neutral voice in the world.
Where do we begin? Like, do we want to delve into, like, and discuss, like, the issues in this book? Or, like, I've just got a lot to say about why I didn't like it, first of all.
I think we should get that, like, out of the way. Do we really go? Curious. Because, I think what's interesting about masculinity and, like, what we say about it is probably as, like varied as our experiences of femininity. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because we've always had men around us, and we've always, like, experienced the good and bad things about masculinity. We've probably all been watching masculinity from afar,
yeah,
and from very near our whole life. So it's like what rings true to us and stuff.
And become aware of, I feel incredibly lucky that I'm not a man, like, in a lot really? Of ways, because of the toxic masculinity, and that I feel very happy that that level of social expectation, especially when it comes to talking about feelings and talking about, like, when I say I go to therapy, no one bats an eyelid.
Sure,
like,
but if
that
you were
kind of thing.
A guy.
Whilst obviously I miss out on all the benefits of the patriarchy. I do feel
those patriarchal benefits.
Those sweet air miles into the big time.
I love the fact that I can talk about my feelings, because that's something that's really important to me, and I've built a career off it.
True.
But do you think you'd feel like that if you didn't know what it was like to be you?
Yeah, maybe not. But, like, every guy I date or have dated is like, wow, you communicate so easily. Like, yeah. Because it's important.
Bring you along.
And you can too. but, yeah.
I think I'd totally rather be a man pre-Spice Girls, and then post-Spice Girls, I'd totally rather be a woman. I mean, Spice Girls isn't the thing we should hook this whole, like, success and
I think so.
Sex, you know, but, girl, like...
Shout out to Chloe Plumstead, if anyone knows who she is. She's a blogger. She'd just written an ode to the Spice Girls and what it taught her about femininity on her blog.
Cool.
So good.
Aww,
I will send it to both of you.
I do love
you.
The Spice Girls.
Right, tell me why you didn't like this book,
okay,
Hannah.
I don't know how to, like, summarise this properly now, but I wrote some things in the back of the book, and I'm just going to read out. And these things I wrote down, like, as I was feeling them.
Yeah.
Mm. But then I also have lots of notes throughout the rest of the book, but these are, like, my overarching things. I wrote, it's like it's written by an outsider, could have been written by a woman, no added value into the male psyche. So I think I wasn't getting any added value with the fact that the author was male.
Okay.
That's what I think. Like, because he's like a liberal feminist man, I was just like, you could be a friend of mine and I totally agree with you and blah, blah, blah. There was no value added because... Yeah, I didn't get that male insight that I, like, wanted. Mm. And I also wrote, more nuance needed. I want the counter-argument. Although it's not necessarily the counter-argument. I just wanted a sensible, laddish football fan talking about why he loves shouting and male bonding camaraderie, etc.
Yeah.
I feel like we need that book.
I feel like I really wanted, like, someone like my dad, who is, like, very... I would say my dad is, like, more in the sensitive, effeminate, side of masculinity, but he bloody loves football and he loves cheering and he, like, gets so into it, and, like, he loves mosh pits and, like,
and they're very, like, and, like, social aspects of masculinity.
Yeah, and also my dad, like, the only male friends my dad has are the partners of my mum's friends, and so it's like, I don't know, and I've just noticed that, especially, like, with my parents' age group and all of their friends, my mum's like, oh yeah, like, all of, you know, all of your dad's friends are, like, my friends' husbands. But it's like, I don't know. So I
think
just,
that's quite common, isn't it?
I want, like, I don't know. I feel
I
like it's
explained.
I just think it's really interesting how, like, so one of the things that, you know, we've learned through feminism is that the patriarchy isn't, like, men are better than women. It's masculinity is valued over femininity, which is why, like, men who are more feminine are... like, bullied, and women who are more masculine are praised. Mm. And so part of what the feminist movement has done is, like, let's celebrate femininity. Like, it's okay to be whatever kind of woman, and one of those things is let's also not punish women for being overly feminine.
Yeah.
And what this book is doing is, like, okay, look at the sliding scale of masculinity. Like, it's really bad to be super masculine. Mm. And obviously I think there must be a line somewhere when it becomes toxic masculinity and when it's literally killing people. Mm. But it's weird that there's no equivalent of, like, extreme femininity that kills people. Like, what does that look like? And whereas we're, like, celebrating that, we're like, it's okay to be super feminine, but also, like, okay to be everything else. And, like, I don't know. I want to see, like, a middle ground of, like, okay, toxic masculinity, the thing that kills people and is really dangerous, that's bad, but let's celebrate, like, moderate masculinity. Like, do you know what I mean?
I want to see a study of masculinity. I don't want to see, like, this is why it's bad.
Yeah. I think that...
Also, I just feel like I knew everything in this book. So maybe it, like, wasn't for me. Like, I
didn't... We've read too much on it now. It felt completely repetitive to me, but because I've read it all.
Yeah.
But also a lot of the more sciencey books that we've read about, like, female sexuality, vaginas, and all of that sort of stuff, there's been so much new information in those. I'm like, holy shit, mind blown.
Yeah.
And this, my mind... have not been blown.
And his mind remains intact.
It would be an amazing introduction to someone who'd never really heard of feminism.
Yeah.
Or like the idea of non-binary.
I see so much value in this book, but it just wasn't for me. I think that's
yeah. I'm trying to work out, this really interests me, I'm trying to work out what the bad extreme of femininity is. Is it complete dependence and no... and sucking everybody else's resources because you don't...
Stepford wifehood, maybe?
Maybe. Or just complete... or staying a child. You know?
I don't know.
Because like, extreme femininity, like, when you push that stereotype to the extreme, is childlike behaviour. So maybe... And then this extreme masculinity is into the wild. I don't depend on anyone. I provide for everybody and therefore I control everyone. You know, like...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So maybe it's more like a dependence thing. I don't know. That's really
interesting.
I was just thinking
maybe it's total dependence. I think it's... Mm. Yeah, hyperfemininity is total dependence upon... Mm. Or let's say it's a stereotype. Are these all turning to stereotypes? Because then I was about to be like, oh, and vanity. But that's not femininity.
That's just
a stereotype. Yeah.
And also it's very repetitive. And I think once I got once I get into a mindset of being annoyed at a book, I start nitpicking at everything. Yeah. So anything that he said wrong incorrect or like, no, I was
I think maybe he was expecting people to dip in and out of the book and not read it cover to cover. However, it's not a novel, but it's like, the way it is displayed,
like, very
you have to read
articles,
it.
Isn't it.
Yeah, you should read it cover to cover, or at least that's how you'd assume you'd read it.
Yeah, he's addressing the author he's addressing the reader the whole way through as if he's like taking them on this journey. So he's like, as I previously mentioned in chapter
but then
blah,
he re-explains
and then,
it.
Yeah, he's so annoying.
I've read like, MRA culture like, we've been here. Six times
we've
in this
been
book,
here. And the history as well. I've had so much history explained to me. Yeah, that's also because I was a history student.
Again,
nothing
I think that's kind
new.
Of like,
yeah.
I think it's interesting because I was reading it like alongside my boyfriend, who's also reading it, but he has just read the Grace and Perry book, and he said the Grace and Perry book helped him a lot more.
Okay,
oh, really?
So,
have we talked about?
Well, I think
our
your
boyfriend
is kind
the book.
Of your boyfriend is this woke guy. Another Jack Irwin. So he'll just be reading it the way we're reading it, I would have thought, and is just like,
know this. Yeah, I also, you know.
Yeah, live it too.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I just say?
Yeah.
I think, like, I really like the way that Jack Irwin does write, and I think
I'd really like
to read more of what he... Yeah, I didn't find it, but the reader was, like, a bedtime story reader.
Yeah.
So, like, I listened to the audiobook, and so it wasn't quite on that level. But, like, I do think he's a good writer, and it's my own personal... A lot of it's my personal nitpicking.
Yeah,
I do recommend the book. I don't want to be, like, cunty about it. Am I allowed to say that on this podcast?
Cunty. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we've
said it. Because I don't think it's, like, a terrible book. You know, it's not like I'm going to throw it down the floor and be like, no one read this and then burn it.
Yeah.
It's not 50 Shades.
I feel like I'm going to be, like, really antagonistic about this just for no reason.
Just do it.
That's fine. Yeah.
That's what it's for.
The thing is, I agree with everything he says.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm going to nitpick it.
I've never read an author that I was so much, like, we are exactly the same stance and everything.
Yeah,
like we just are. Maybe that's why it was.
Maybe that's why I hated it, because it's like that punishing yourself and self-loathing. And
like, you're like, oh, it's me explaining myself again.
Yeah,
I love it. Okay, so the first point that I thought was interesting is like talking about how masculinity has been and whether that has been like this evolutionary thing that was inevitable up until a certain point, which he says is pretty much like wrong, a bit stupid. So my teacher question
I love it.
Was, what do we think to the argument that before modern times, testosterone meant that male and female roles were predestined and understandable? Have you ever heard people use this argument? What do you say?
I have heard people use this argument because one of those people is my boyfriend.
Yeah.
So this is like his argument, which is that, yes, in terms of physicality and the general biology differences between men and women, you have these like, air quote, natural roles.
Mm.
But then modernity and everything that's like basically happened, like the agricultural revolution and all of this like new tech that we have, basically means that we are like we've civilized beyond that, and like those roles aren't necessary anymore. And so it's like it should be a level playing field.
But I think it was way before modernity. Like we're talking like maybe like 3,000 years ago. So like I wouldn't say it's like a new idea.
So agricultural revolution.
Is that when the agricultural revolution was?
Well,
the
agricultural revolution was kind of like what stopped the hunter foraging.
But when did that happen?
Can we Google?
I can't remember. Like, I literally Google. Like I, in the
it
book,
was like pre-Bible times.
In the yeah.
I'm on it, gang.
Because of the 10,000 shepherds, right?
10,000 years ago.
It was like
10,000
years.
No.
Right. Wait.
We have to cut this out depending on how wrong
the book,
we are.
The book, this book, Sex at Dawn, that I read, like has loads of stuff about the shift from like.
What's it called?
Hunter-gatherer. Sex at Dawn. It's a great book. Great.
The agricultural revolution was circa 10,000 BC.
There we go. 10,000 BC.
So, like, that's 10,000 years ago.
But that's one of the things that happened.
Mm.
And then the other big one was, like, the industrial revolution.
Yeah.
And then kind of, like, what Jack Owen says in the book is, like, the Second World War.
Mm.
When, like, women working.
Yeah.
And also inflation. Mm. Meaning you need like a two-income family to like survive
world. That was really interesting to read because I was like, fuck, we need this.
If women didn't work, then it would be like everyone would be starving.
Mm.
Although I also heard like a really interesting argument about like this is kind of a side point, but like how there's lots of men aren't in work at the moment, but partly because they've been trained in masculine jobs and masculine skills that aren't available, but there's a huge deficit of like roles for nurses and caregivers, but they're not trained in those things because they never were. So we were actually having like a kind of 50-year deficit of training where it's like men either refuse or have never been brought up to be in those roles, which is why we outsource those jobs to people from
different
Europe,
countries.
who can do it, and then they're racist towards those people even though you're like, but you could have done that job, you just didn't.
I think that's really interesting. Especially with nursing and carers.
Yeah.
That is so notable. And isn't it funny how we think of doctors as like a really masculine, I think of being a doctor as a really masculine version of the profession. It's similar levels of education to nursing. Not quite the same, but like.
Even the other day, I like completely slipped up and someone said something about a doctor and I then like went asking them a question again, used male pronouns, and they were like, no, it's a female doctor, and I was like, holy shit, Hannah. What the fuck, like I'm still like automatically, I was like,
it's
sake.
Really weird, isn't it,
even though like most of the doctors that I know personally, like friends of mine who are doctors, are all women. I was like, fuck,
like,
I hope that caring deficit like sorts out. I don't have any opinions on your question because I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
And honestly, it doesn't really concern me. Is that bad? I'm more concerned with how things are right now.
Yeah, I suppose that makes sense.
Like, whether it was or wasn't like generic roles is what it is now.
Yeah.
So, fuck the the agricultural revolution was great. Good work.
It meant that we could feed ourselves.
Yeah. And farms are fun.
Yeah.
For all the family.
Either way, gender norms remained for a really long time.
Yep.
And it is what it is.
Gender norms, my great cousin.
Oh my god.
Gender's coming round for Christmas dinner. I'm really excited.
In between your notes thing, shall I just like go through nitpicks of
you,
mine?
You have we'll have one point and then one nitpick.
Okay. One of mine. This one's actually quite funny, which is he's talking about this actually is related to the section that we were just talking about, something about milk, I can't remember, but anyway, he says men by contrast would have been unable to fulfill the role of childcare because they lack the ability to produce milk, a fact I sometimes lament when I gaze in the mirror at my inexplicable set of functionless nipples. And I was like, not inexplicable, because actually it was explained to us in the last book that we read.
I remember reading that and being like, that's quite funny.
It is explicable. Just read Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. Anyway,
I just saw a bit that I underlined and like lolled. Was like, so at least he's like quite self-conscious. He was like, this is the end of the introduction, he talks about how his dad could have, so basically a big part of the reason that Jack wrote this book was because his dad was kind of died of an illness he could have easily been diagnosed with and treated for, but he literally never went to the doctor in his whole life because he didn't see it as very, he was always weak to go to the doctor. And he's talking about that, and he says he could have spared the world yet another gratuitous, self-indulgent book penned by a millennial about the about an emotionally distant late father, and I'd have someone to mutter to me disapprovingly every time I mentioned how my career and housing situation and life was going. And I was like,
that is us. How old is Jack?
He's like mid to late 20s.
Does he live in the UK?
Yeah.
No, he lives
he mentions midway through that he lives
Toronto.
Yeah, he moved to Canada with his girlfriend.
Nice, good for him.
He's 24. Well, he was 24 like 2 years ago. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay,
he's 26. I thought he was in his like early 30s from
reading
that
younger
book.
Than me.
Oh no.
Now think how old all the other people are that write books about masculinity. Fucking ancient.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Another thing actually in that section all about like how men came to be men and how masculinity has changed over the thousands of years that humans have existed. I think he talks about like the agricultural revolution, he talks about the wars, he talks about loads of things that have had like a big impact on deciding in society what it means to be a man, and he missed out a fucking huge one, and I was just like, mate. And that's religion. He's like completely just like forgotten the fact that the church would have had such an impact, and still to some people today, on like what it means to be a man,
you're
like
so
a godly
right.
man,
had,
and like
I'm not noticed
and
the
women
of that.
Are
and religion hugely shapes how people feel about gender and masculinity and femininity, and that just like was not mentioned, and I was like,
that's so
missed
yeah.
a trick. Anyway, this is my nitpicking, but I think that's
well, I don't think that's a nitpick. It's so true. How did I not notice that?
I know, Miss Christian.
I just
raised,
feel like
born and
this book would have made so much more sense as like, you know, the little black book.
Yeah.
Like a bit thicker than that, but that kind of size. It's like a pocketbook for
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like really, really like We Should All Be Feminists.
Yeah.
Like a We Should All Be Feminists version.
Yeah, that's very true.
Okay, what was your next point, Lena?
I think this is more a thought train that I was going on with this point.
Go for it.
But he's talking about social and political views and how they move forward towards more progressive societies. And he says, consider our social and political views. It's rare for a generation to be more conservative than one directly preceding it. And by the extension, any before that one too. If you look at the societal change we have made in the last century, it's near none of that would have been possible had each subsequent generation not favoured more progressive policies. And then he goes on to talk about like preserving masculine values and preserving like the nuclear family and why that's advantageous to capitalism and stuff. And I was just like writing about like how, scribbling the back of my book furiously about like, is masculinity political? Do we think that like conservative values are conserving male power? And like, what the fuck about that? What the fuck?
Well,
I was just thinking. I was
doesn't
like, oh
this
God,
go yeah. back to the point? Which book was it that we were reading? Was it Juno Dawson's The Gender Games, where we decided that Margaret Thatcher created gender?
Or, oh, yeah.
Or, oh yeah, because of capitalism,
she did.
So
that's
just
still a fact I'm going with.
We've come
full circle,
and it is now confirmed.
Capitalism
it
does
like,
reaffirm gender.
Yeah. But I'm like, it made me think about how, like, because I was getting really annoyed recently at Theresa May, which will come as no surprise to anyone. And I was just like, we've had two female prime ministers, and they've both not been feminists, and they've both been women. What the fuck? And then
at
I'm
least
like,
one of them
oh wait, they were both, you know, conservative. Mm. So it's like, I don't know.
That's
I don't know how to feel about that in my very left wing views, but I'm like, I always swing between wanting to feel like, oh, being left and being right, they're just different points of view, and in the middle is the right answer, and to being like, actually, I fundamentally think being conservative is, like, actually wrong. Like, I'm actually like, no, genuinely, I think it might be actually wrong.
How connected are... It depends on how connected you think economic and economic politics and social politics are.
Hugely connected.
I think they're quite connected, but I think there's way more scope now to be like, I'm economically conservative but politically socially liberal. In terms of like, you
so
can believe
like,
in gender equality and you can be like, I'm totally pro-LGBT stuff and like act to support your gay marriage and everything, but being economically conservative. And in the same way,
I think that like takes economics away from people, because I think ultimately like you can talk about like economics on a like a grander scale, and it's just like companies and it's numbers and it like and then these huge numbers and their percentages and interest, and you're like, you can do that, and it distances it and it makes it seem really impersonal, but actually like the case of it is like those percentages affect real people, and
mostly affect women,
affect poor people, disabled people, immigrants. Like it is about people, and if you're socially liberal, effectively that means you care about people, you care about minorities, and you know you're striving for equality. So why aren't you striving for economic equality? Which like I could go on, but like I genuinely believe that like poverty is like the root cause of most of the inequality that we like see in the world, whether it be like gender, race, like all of that stuff. Like you fucking fix that like 1% shit and like a lot of other things will straighten out.
Yeah, but then
can we change
into like a political podcast? But then also it's like
Is Bank Book Club not political already, Lena?
Sorry, we are the most political podcast.
But also it's like the idea of old money, in that like conservative values, economic values are there to uphold and like validate old money, and like if your grandparents
are they there to validate?
Well, I think they are, but then I don't know that much about it.
We're very weighted. Like this is the thing, like I think, because there's obviously in the US there's the libertarian movement where it's like everyone do what the fuck they want, but also everyone keep their money is the idea of it. So it's economically conservative, but socially very, very liberal. It's like everyone, but it's also like anti-gun control, because it's like everyone should have their own guns.
Who's it?
This is the Libertarian Party in the US.
Oh, in the US.
So it's very like everyone do what they want. Like we really want people to be happy, but each man for themselves. Is the idea of it,
so like
right?
Armageddon, but like
it's like I think it's like an anarchist party.
How have we gotten onto this?
Anyway, sorry. So I think there are ways to be economically conservative,
what
and socially liberal.
Thus,
I don't. I think
was saying
it's
masculine.
I don't think it's
political.
Directly entirely tied
it
to masculinity.
It's masculinity.
Not political. Entirely tied, I don't think, but there are definite connections.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a long old tangent.
But really,
I'm into it.
Interesting.
And now for another Hannah nitpick.
Can I add something after that?
Yes,
I've got a funny thing.
So the next nitpick that I found, this I'm just going through the book in like order and just going to each page that I've turned over, is when he's talking about different advertising campaigns directed at men and the strategies that they use in order to, like, they're like safety PSA campaigns. So one of them he talks about is the Samaritans campaign.
Yeah, I remember this.
About trying to reduce male suicide and getting men to talk about their mental health. And he criticizes this campaign because they used traditionally masculine men in the advertising posters to be like, look, this man is, he's doing a masculine job, like he's a boxer, he's in the army, like he's a really masculine guy, but he still talks about his feelings and it doesn't emasculate him. And Jack criticizes that because he's like, you're pandering and like it's, you're playing into the problem, right? And then he praises this other campaign for doing exactly the same thing.
Wait, what was the other campaign?
The other campaign is like the Australian one, trying to get, because men are like statistically more risky drivers.
Yeah.
And the one of the theories behind why men drive like faster and
take
more risks is because they're overcompensating, because it's like, oh, you've got a small dick or whatever.
Yeah.
And this advertising campaign was like, what
it's women
it
waggling their little finger
yeah.
at
it's
them.
It's women waggling, waving their pinky fingers, and the slogan is, speeding, waggling. No one thinks big of you. And so, and he's like, this is great, because it takes this, like, thing that men worry about and is so tied to their masculinity and, like, turns it against them and makes them realise that staying alive is better than having a big dick. but then I was just like, but the other campaign was also pandering to that masculinity thing.
Yeah.
And you just criticised it. Yeah. And I'm just like, am I missing something here, Jack? Or
is one okay and one not?
Or are you not making sense? So that's another thing.
But I suppose, like, one's based on the actuality of somebody's body and it being massive and fit and, like, masculine. And then one's, like, the perceived... Like, basically, if you drive... If you speed, everyone's going to think you've got a small dick.
Yeah. That was that, and it works.
But
apparently.
It's more perceived. I mean,
I think he goes on to challenge it a bit more later in the thing.
He does talk about body image later.
Can I pop in?
Yeah,
this
go
is
on.
Slightly off topic, but how weird is it reading a book that doesn't know that Trump was elected president?
Oh yeah.
Like, it's like, and now in January 2016, when da-da-da, oh look at all the progress we're making, I'm just like, you don't know what happens next.
There is a bit where he's like, oh, Trump is a frontliner for the Republican candidate, and you're just like, oh,
like, oh god. Even then, there's this like blissful ignorance throughout about like loads of other political things. Brexit hadn't happened.
No.
Oh God. It's so weird to read a... Yeah, maybe it is really political masculinity because, like, it's a political book.
I mean, if we're going way back when into feminism, Betty Friedan, personal is political.
But yeah, reading Trump stuff freaked me out.
Do you follow a Twitter account called The Millerverse? It's a Twitter account operating from a supposed universe where Ed Miliband won the 2012 election. And it's like, and in the news today, Ed Miliband's eating a packet of crisps. What a great prime minister.
Wait, what's this account?
It's called The Millerverse.
Oh my God. Right, another podcast recommendation. Have you come across Ed Miliband's new podcast?
Yeah, it's really good.
So good, isn't it?
How to Be Happy.
Yeah, Reasons to Be Cheerful. I'd really recommend it. Yeah. It's like funny. Like, he jokes about losing the election.
He's really like hilarious.
Is it just
he's
him?
Such a great man.
No, he's got a co-host. And then they get on, they interview people. So they've done one about the gender pay gap. Done one
Owen Jones spin on it.
It's really good. So everyone, we really like Ed Miliband. I'm sorry.
Ed and Dave. I voted for him, just saying.
Yeah.
I think I voted for him in the Labour leadership.
Weren't we all in that room when we found out at the ballot party?
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
all found, oh my God, that was awful.
Sad anyway. Times.
Right.
Another one of Hannah's nitpicks. He said, he's talking about Fight Club, and he goes, although I'll happily admit to enjoying both Chuck Palahniuk's novel and David Fincher's adaptation, and I just underlined that and wrote, show off.
Yeah.
I don't think you like Jack.
I don't want
him. I don't know.
I think
I'm like, I would probably really like him and just like have a great conversation with him around the pub. But I just think I started reading this with a negative mindset, and then I think it took off.
Yeah.
And do you know who I'm gonna blame?
Mm-hmm.
Dan. Because Dan started reading this before me and started telling me about how he hates it, and then
I went into it
with that mindset.
Well, I think it's really interesting because this is like the one book that we've read that I have zero experience in. Well,
sure.
Apart from having been
Having
been close to some men in my life. But like, apart from that, I'm not a man, you know? I haven't grown up with these ideals and these expectations, so in some ways I guess we have to listen to the boys on their review.
Yeah.
to see whether it's good or not. But
I think, Hannah, you see a bit of yourself in his writing.
Oh my God,
you've also written a non-fiction.
Yeah, no.
I personally...
It's competition. No, I really do.
I find when I see people doing the same thing I do, better or worse, usually a little bit worse, it really fucking grates on me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I find them
when they're
so
doing it worse.
Irritating.
No,
but like, or like on a par, but they are doing all the things that annoy me about myself.
Yeah. Mm. No, this was genuinely one of my thoughts whilst I was reading this. I was like, he writes like me. Like, I feel like my book, sentence structure and the way that he addresses the reader is, and like humour is very similar. And you're right, you tend to hate people who are very similar to you.
Yeah. Well, I can't watch YouTube.
I enjoy both of your books.
I just remember, I would never have thought that until you told me you just liked
it,
and now you said it. Mm. I think that might be one contributing factor.
I think it's like, because I can like hear it like almost being my voice, and then I'm like self-editing. So as I'm going through, I'm
that's
just like,
so
I'm self-editing it. So here's another bit where he like is talking about something, some research about male idiot theory, which has a term that's actually been used in the British Medical Journal. He's talking about like the Darwin Awards and how like men do stupid things and kill themselves.
Yeah, the Darwin Awards things really.
And so he, 90% of the Darwin Award winners are male. So men are doing fucking stupid things and like, taking risks that are then killing them. And then he quotes a Daily Mail article about it. And the Daily Mail article is like quoting the British Medical Journal and like researchers, and I was just like, why do you not just fucking directly quote from the British Medical Journal? Why did you quote from the Daily
Why do we
Mail?
Have to go through this?
Because also, you've written a non-fiction book about sex and gender, so I guess you know the process it is to make. I just wish it had been better edited.
Yeah.
Like, It's maybe not that's him.
It. No, I think it's maybe whoever
that's didn't it. Say, hey, we I feel don't like need I'm this being reconcluded.
I do feel
times.
Like I'm being a massive
dick. I wrote
dick.
About this Darwin Award stuff as well. Is it because
it's like men taking risks, like a lot more than women?
Oh yeah, so I was I wrote about that and I was like, is it also to do with like whether men succeed, men take more risks in the public eye, and whether they succeed or they fail, they always get in the press for it, whereas women would only get in the press for it if they failed, or
wait,
they wouldn't
this,
even
sorry?
Notice. So, like, wait. Any kind of, like, business risk, like, big, like,
yeah.
big, like, maybe a risk that's, like breaking a record or something, it's usually a man who gets in the news first, so it's, like, this thing of, like, risk, and that's, like, what are the payoffs of risks for women? Not that much. But then if you risk something as a man, you can either fail spectacularly and die a hero.
Oh my God.
In the jaws of a crocodile or whatever. Or you know, and it's your
you know
your
what?
Failure isn't perceived in the same way.
You can see that with, look at Teen Vogue. You know Elaine, what's her name?
The editor.
Wentworth?
Yeah.
She is the editor. She's not white. She's black, I think.
I don't know.
But yeah, follow her Instagram. She's got a massive cult following on Instagram.
Yeah.
Has completely changed the way that the Teen Vogue reports. As
it's
I'm
so
sure you've seen,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
really, really woke.
Yeah.
I say that in inverted commas.
Yeah, do we
I don't
still
say the word
woke?
Really, really woke. But they've just had to shut down their print publication and it's been reported on so widespread.
Yeah, and I'm like, doing the same thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loads of people are shutting down their print and just sticking to online stuff, which is so sad.
I mean, it's wise.
Yeah, but oh, I love print editions of magazines. But, yeah, that's been so widely reported on, and her name is thrown under the bus.
Really?
Yeah, distinctly. Like, not
like
in a way that's like
she single-handedly stopped the digital revolution.
Yeah, but like in a way that's like Teen Vogue's editor Elaine, like was you
oh,
know
man.
Really brought into like improve diversity. You know,
yeah.
it's like trying to pick at the failings. Anyway,
yeah.
it's a good example.
Yeah, of like
it's like well, it's like
if
women
you
are...
if you fail spectacularly as a man, you're still a lad.
I feel like women are more like when you follow their success, you're waiting to watch them fall.
Yeah.
I think more so than with men. With men, whereas, so like, I'm thinking of another brand, the Glossier brand.
Mm.
Another cult of personality is the lady who stars at Emily Weiss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They're waiting for her to fall. Like, she's interviewed in Time and all this stuff, but, like, they will be dying to write the articles of, like,
really?
How did such a successful millennial brand fall from grace?
Is this kind of like Nasty Gal?
Yeah. Exactly, like how
Gal,
can we tear that
Sophia,
lady down?
Yeah. Sophia What's-Her-Face went bankrupt and it was, like, everywhere. And
yeah.
The, like, Girl
yeah.
Boss.
We didn't even like her
Although,
anyway.
Yeah, but I read Girl Boss and I genuinely don't like her, so I'm like... Fall.
Yeah.
Fall
but
into my arms.
We don't do that
and
with
I
other
to,
men.
Yeah, no, I don't know, I pretty much hate loads of people. I'm like, everyone can fall.
Mm.
But then, maybe that's me.
We're a bit negative.
What's happening?
Have I brought us down? I'm so sorry.
You bring me down?
It's
no,
the weather.
I think it's masculinity.
Maybe.
Pretty tough.
It's currently 3 degrees outside.
We've caught masculinity.
Let's move on to a next general point. I have
yeah.
another nitpick.
Okay, go on.
I've underlined a bit where Jack says, a friend recently pointed out that for women, intimate gynecological exams are routine throughout their lives. And I just wrote, who is this friend? They lied. The UK, the first smear is at 25.
What are they? Oh, yeah, all of his, if he wrote this when he was 24, none of his mates.
None of his mates have had a smear test. So like, yeah, no.
You have them in Wales at 21. I ran from it because I was living in Wales at the time. They kept sending me the form and I was like, fuck. I was like, if I put this off long enough, I'll move back to England. In, I think in Scotland and Wales it's earlier.
Yeah.
Wait, in other countries. They really bad or something?
No, they're fine. It's but fine. You know.
I've had my vagina looked at and had my legs in stirrups.
Same.
It's just...
They put a little, like, Pringle thing in it. Like, you know, you put two Pringles...
It's a speculum.
I describe it as if you put two Pringles together, right, and they're at that end, and then you push them in, and you pull the Pringles apart, so like that.
Yeah. I can't wait for that to happen.
No, that's a really good.
That's
that.
Just,
do you know it's
you
happening?
You can have that one.
Do you know it's happening?
What do you mean? Of course
bit.
You do.
Okay.
In the same way that you feel a willy inside you.
Okay.
I realise I'm 27.
You,
I
you say feel it a willy inside you that is clamping you open.
Ooh,
it's fine.
How's your... Oh, I'll ask you about your coil when we're not on the thing. How's your coil?
How's your coil?
We forget you guys are here sometimes, I'll be real.
Can we talk
okay. So, I have some questions.
Yes, questions.
Okay, the issue of naked men.
Oh, objectifying men.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, like, is it... I think in parts of this, let me remind myself, he talks about how it's not really possible to objectify men, which I don't think is true.
No, he says it definitely is possible. Oh, no. He's like, you can't objectify men.
It's entirely different.
Like racism.
Yeah, it's entirely different to women objectifying men, which tends to mean quite simply enjoying their appearance and not equating their looks to their worth as humans and perpetuating a dangerous entitlement to their bodies. Now, so my criticism of Jack in this book is that I think he sometimes, because he's worried about displeasing feminists or saying shit that people will be like, oh, he's not a real feminist, he almost like elevates the female experience, whereas sometimes I'm like, Jack, we definitely do objectify people. I'm like, thank you for the compliment, but we definitely objectify men.
I remember like being huge conversations about this around like when Magic Mike and stuff was coming out, because that's like had you know, like, women were like, oh my god. And then people are like, wait, you're objectifying men, you can't do that. And then they're like, yes, we can, fuck you.
Yeah.
And I think, like, yes, men can objectify women, women can objectify men, men can be objectified
but there's no
by anyone.
Sexism there.
Yeah, this is a thing because when a woman is objectified, usually by a man, there's so many layers to that, and part of that objectification is male entitlement. So it's like you're objectifying, but also. In general, there's like a sense of like, oh, I have permission, I have entitlement over like touching that body, looking at that body, doing what I want to that body. I don't think that next step is made when women objectify men. Like, there isn't that entitlement there. I can be like, he's really hot, I don't care about his personality, but look at those abs. But then there's no like undercurrent culture there that makes me then leap to. And he owes me sex.
Do you know what I mean? And he's not worthy of anything. Like, bet you he's a dumb bitch. And like, I don't know, like, there's none of that, like, you assume when you see someone in Playboy.
I just think because there's a culture.
And stupid and like.
Yeah. I just think because there's a culture of male entitlement, like, when it comes to objectifying women, like, even like, the objectifying is the same, but then the. What that means is different, I think.
Is
or
it
what
okay
it could
to objectify
mean.
People?
No, it shouldn't be, but it's fun. We all do it.
I think because it's fine to objectify people
it might be
on
okay,
a low level.
Then...
Like, you can't
what if you
not...
want to, like... The thing is that
it's
we do it...
Impression for
you, I do it to men and I do it to women in terms of, like, there's someone really hot walks past me on the street.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't care to get to know them better, or maybe I don't have the opportunity to get to know them better. Mm. So the only thing that I have to go on off this person is their, like, exterior.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, damn, that's a nice exterior.
Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't mean we don't want to discover that, you know, the interior will come if we speak to them. Like, that ultimately is more important. Yeah. I don't know, could you fuck someone that was really hot but was... dumb and boring.
I have
and
done. What do you think I was doing for those 3 years, Lucy?
Because I
had sex with an Abercrombie and Fitch model. It was the most disappointing. And you know what? It was the same kind of disappointing as every other disappointing sexual experience, but I wouldn't write home about it.
Maybe the expectations were low.
Oh, Dad, I fucked an Abercrombie and Fitch model.
It was
see you at Christmas.
Mediocre at best.
Are we problematic?
Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think it's also interesting. Like, I remember, do you ever remember reading like Top of the Pops and Smash Hits, and they'd always be like really naked boy band stuff.
Yeah, like I was like 13. Harry's abs. Yeah, like. And there's loads of stuff. Oh my god, with thingy Finn Wolfhard off of Stranger Things. The 14-year-old boy. Yeah.
And everyone's like, hit me up when you're 18.
Well, not everyone. One person. Okay. And it set off everything.
Yeah.
Like, that isn't...
I still think that's wrong.
That's definitely wrong.
Yeah. But there's also a lot of stuff about mocking men for their appearance, which in some ways we've become a lot more... We've had a lot of discussions about that over the last, like, 10 years about mocking women for their appearance and been, like, working through that as a society, being like, probably wrong, probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But with men, it's really acceptable to be like, I fucking hate Trump and his tiny hands. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, or, like, he's so fat, he shouldn't be president. What?
Yeah, it's so true. You don't get that.
And I rarely...
All the insults with Hillary, it's crooked and about her... But that's gendered in a very specific way.
Yeah, that's true. It's more like kind of old witch.
I don't know. There was like that weird front cover. I can't remember which newspaper, but let's say it's the Daily Mail, because why not?
Odds on.
But it was like Theresa May and Nicola Sturgeon, and they were like sat in a certain way, and the headline was like about their legs.
It was the Daily Mail.
Yeah, there you go. The other thing about body image
but
in this
book... But we now know that's tasteless, whereas but, if Trump does it, the liberal...
But I find myself like... No. There's loads of times where I'd hear that and I would never stand up for... men or especially Trump. I'd just be like, yeah, talk about small hands. I won't particularly do it myself. And that, I also used to think that I've started catching myself for since I read this book a couple of years ago is when I'm like somebody's boyfriend is horrible to them, and I'm like, they're not even hot, like, get rid of them, you know.
Oh, really?
And like, part of me is like, they're also not good looking, so why are you with them? You know, they've treated why, but that's like a really normal thing.
If they're
thing
a bad person,
I've heard
and
loads of
not
women
hot.
Do.
Yeah,
it is an afterthought.
Yeah,
it's
or
not
like you can do so much better.
Of.
What does that mean?
the other stuff that he like talks about in this book about body image, because there's like a whole section on body image, and I do think it's really good, because I think that's, you know, there's a lot that has been done, and there's a lot obviously still to do around like female body image and the female bodies that we see in the media, but it's like obviously not talked about as much in terms of male body image. Like, and the thing that comes to mind is like that Diet Coke advert or whatever, and like the man like gets his top off, and like, and it's clearly like four straight women to be like, oh my god, oh, Diet Coke or Maltesers or whatever the fuck it is, but it's aimed at straight women, and it's got like a ripped topless man in it, and we're like, that's fine. You know, that's so fine.
We've played that past.
That's fine. But obviously it isn't. Yeah. It isn't fine, because there are loads of like young boys who see that, or they see girls admiring that, and they're like, I have to be that. Like, that is, you know, the ideal male physique. But then it, like, and it goes into that a lot, which I think is really good. But then it and like diet culture and eating disorders and working out and all of that. But then it goes, gay men are every bit as capable of being traditionally masculine, but are less likely to exhibit such toxic behaviour because they don't feel the need to prove themselves or follow a straight man's narrative of their gender. And I was just like, the fuck?
Say
like,
that again.
He's basically saying that So a lot of the reason behind men wanting to have, like, a certain body type is because that is the ideal masculine type, and also the ideal masculine straight man type body. And so if you're, like, super hunk and you're super mask, then also no one will assume you're gay.
Yeah.
And he's just like, openly gay men don't have to worry about that because they're openly gay. And
not
like,
true.
And I was just like...
Think of Jazza.
And also, like, Riyadh and... There was a whole, like, episode on Queer Britain all about gay male body image, and... It is rife with all of the same problems, maybe even worse, because there's the culture of, like, are you also sexually appealing to other men as well? And, like, the diet culture and the gym culture in, like, the gay community. Yeah. And also, like, on dating apps, like, straight people, or I've not seen this, but straight people... will often like hide their prejudices that they have online, whereas on gay dating apps it's like,
they'll just be like,
no,
I don't like chubby people.
Yeah, it's like no fatties, like no blacks, like no this, like and they're just, no femmes, like, and it's just like, what? So it's I don't know, it's like a lot.
Yeah,
I think he like, I don't know, he again missed a whole point there.
Can you even imagine if in your Tinder bio it was like, no brown eyes, I only like blue or green, something like that.
Yeah.
Even on a totally
no men
not
under
offensive,
5'2".
Even on, yeah. In fairness, I did like it and things. That's such an annoying part of gender norms. Weird. Your cousin.
I'll have a word with him when I'm
over. No, I only want to date men that are taller than me.
Yeah.
I'm always like, waggle my finger at myself.
I never have to worry about that because I'm 5 foot.
Oh, matter? Here's a bit that blew my mind. The cuckold's defence.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Oh, my fucking God. So.
Was that ever legal in the UK?
That's
that...
still legal, I think.
No, I don't think
no,
so.
It was illegalised in like 2005 or something.
It's apparently in some states and in Australia still a legal defence. So the cuckold's defence is that if a man murders his partner, a legal defence that they can use was she cheated on me. And
yeah.
So
and then it's a crime of passion.
Crime of passion. So I got angry and murdered her.
But it's...
They don't
And it usually results in a softer sentence and you can only use it if you're a man.
Yeah.
You can't, it's not, there isn't an equivalent for a woman.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't equivalent of a cuckold, like, that word for...
I thought cuckolds were always men.
Yeah, exactly.
The
cuckold is the husband that has been cuckolded.
The actual
I think.
Buck.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not
so. But have you ever found that in your life where I think, well, I don't know, I've witnessed men being a lot more jealous than women.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
And more boyfriends more protective over... girlfriends than...
Yeah, 100%. Even jokingly. So,
because it's a property thing.
My boyfriend gets hit on every time we go out by multiple women.
Oh, really?
It just is constant. And it's so funny. Like, we've been at the pub and we've been a couple, like, evidently a couple, and there are women being like, so, do you live around
here? Oh, my God.
It's so weird.
I want to watch
that. I'm fine with it because I know I trust him. He's not going to do anything. If one guy talks to me... We're in Shoreditch House the other day. Yeah. DJ tries to get my number. And he is there, like, staring him down, like, Lucy, we're going back, aren't we? We're leaving, we're going home. And I think that's such an interesting dynamic, because we have equal levels of trust.
Yeah.
It's just the threateningness of another man for him, whereas for me it's like another woman is, like, threatening. But...
Yeah.
I don't know. It also reaffirms that my boyfriend's attractive.
Yeah, so you're like, thanks for the compliment.
Yeah.
Well, it's the thing, like, I feel like if a girl gets a boyfriend and her other, like, just, like, straight female friends are like, oh, your boyfriend's so hot, you go, oh, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. You're like,
I totally do your boyfriend. Oh, my God, that's so sweet. Yeah. Whereas if guys were like, your girlfriend is... Well, actually, maybe they do go, your girlfriend's
well
fit.
They do it with mums, don't they? Someone's like, your mum is so fit. Fit mum. That's my impression of everybody
ever. That was like Ted culture by Lucy.
Yeah. Your mum is so fit.
The in-betweeners.
But, you know, that becomes like a protective thing. Everyone's like, oh, gross, stop.
What did you think about, like, all the commentary on lad culture? Because he says, like, kind of like that lad culture is the thing that was created to mimic the working class when the working classes were kind of, like, made... redundant and became part of the middle class, and lad culture is inherently definitely bad because it's part of this mimicking of the working class, and it's part of the, like, taking and no giving and you know.
I thought that was great, and, like, especially, like, tying it all into mob mentality,
yeah,
because that's what it is. It's just like a group of guys, like, egging each other on, and, like, if you sat them all down individually, they'd be like, oh, that was dumb, or like, I don't actually think that, but it's like
Jackass.
Yeah, and it's like, you've got to
but
show
Jackass
off, you've got to be cool.
Harass women, does it?
I don't know.
No, but they like egg each other on to like do like the most extreme like thing.
Yeah, or just like drinking. I think it's in drinking so much.
Yeah. I think this book would go really down really well with... It would really help the guy who wrote The Game.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that would be really interesting.
Would you send it to Neil Strauss?
Neil Strauss and Jack Owen in conversation.
Oh, God,
can you imagine?
Yeah. I don't think Jack would stand a chance,
to
be honest.
I think we'd have to have Russell Brand as the warm effect or something. And diffuse the situation.
God, that'd be the dream team of masculine boys.
Yeah.
Just the great thing.
Yeah.
My therapist tells me off for calling men boys. I refer to all people I date as boys.
Me too.
And she's like,
you're not supposed to do that.
She's like, why do you refer to them as boys? They're like 23, 24. And I'm like, yeah, but they behave like boys. And she's like, it's not an excuse. Like, she's like, why don't you call them guys or men?
Yeah.
And I'm like, but in my brain, they're little boys.
Yeah.
She's like, maybe you're projecting. Anyway, I think that's really interesting.
I call them boys as well.
Yeah, I call
them. I always get like, I met a boy.
Yeah. I now don't know what I say. I think I might say that, like, oh, I'm seeing a boy.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's kind of like in a silly voice,
yeah, it's
isn't
a silly
it?
Way.
It's yeah.
A silly thing.
But it is like,
I'm seeing a man.
Yeah.
I've been dating a
I met a
guy,
man,
I guess. I think when I say man, I think American. Of like a 60-year-old man.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's of like true. I think of like Mr. Big. Like, I'm not oh thinking God. Anyone our age. I'm thinking
it's gonna be so
like
weird
30s.
When we're old and we watch Sex and the City, we realise that we're dating somebody the same age as Mr. Big in Sex and the City.
Oh,
mind blown.
Was he in his 40s? Early 40s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Woo!
15 years, let's go.
What else do you want to talk about? I've got notes on bisexuality, porn,
we're at 57
MRA,
minutes.
Rape culture, and the military. Oh, and male suicide.
Yeah, we've not talked about suicide as well. Let's talk about the suicide stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's,
should we end on that?
That's the main thing that he ends on as well, and that's what the one that he's like talked about all of these issues that affect men. And he's gone, this is the one that demands our attention right now.
Yeah.
So I think let's...
Yeah, because I think the reaction to the male suicide argument is always a confusing one for me, because I do think about it and it affects like people that I love and friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also something that's thrown in my face when I try and talk about something that has nothing to do with that as a woman. People
sure.
are like, oh, but men, they kill themselves more often than women, so I don't know what you're complaining about. Their lives are definitely harder. Shut the fuck up. That's usually the context that it's brought up in to me rather than me bringing it up myself.
Mm. Okay.
And that's why I feel weird
that's
about it.
That's definitely like an MRA tactic
yeah.
as well, where it's like, that person, like, I doubt they care that much about the male suicide.
But
like,
yeah,
they care more about taking you down.
I genuinely can't think of anything sicker than using dead people who kill themselves through suicide to attack women online. Like,
does,
can you think of, like, a worse
the
person?
Stats around it are also, like, really interesting. So, like, if you look, like, the hard stats say, like, the... suicide is like the biggest killer of young men, and men are way more likely to die from suicide than women. And then the other stats that Jack brings up is that women are actually more likely to suffer from mental illnesses like depression, but women are more likely to actually go to the doctor, because those numbers are only like diagnosed cases. So actually there are probably, they're very likely to be loads of undiagnosed cases of male depression. But then the other thing is that I don't know what the official stats are, but it gets actually a lot more closer in terms of numbers of male-female suicide attempts. But because men choose more drastic or masculine...
That is interesting.
They use more masculine ways to kill themselves, like hanging or guns, whereas women kind of kill themselves a bit more quietly.
With pills
and stuff.
Don't work
and then they women are more likely to survive suicide attempts than men. Like, because men would just die instantly. So, I don't know, heavy. Yeah, so I feel like the conversation around that is, like, so much more nuanced and detailed, and there's, like, there's so much more to discuss around that, but I don't think we, like, know all of the facts. But all we do know is that men need to, like, talk and open up and... there just needs to be, like, such less stigma around. If that's, like, the main thing that he goes in about, just, like, men, talk about your feelings.
Yeah.
Men, open up.
Mm.
Because
it
will literally save your life.
Turn it into a competition as well of, like, more men die from suicide. I'm like, hey, more women die from their male partners killing them. Do you want to turn it into a stats game?
Yeah,
do you know
true.
What I mean? Like, a lot of women that may have killed themselves later down the line from abuse don't get to that point because they're already killed by their partners or their dads. Or, you know, it's not... it's horrible to talk about, but you can't turn it into a game because nobody wins, do they?
Nope.
That. But, but yeah, but male suicide is something that I'm, like, thinking more about, and I don't really know what, you know, there's nothing one person can do about it, but it's, like, it's admittedly very shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I think it's, like, we have to, like, make sure we can have conversations with our partners and our dads.
Yeah.
And brothers or whoever, and like the men in our lives about that. But I thought it was really interesting what Jack was saying about his relationship, like the ex who he like talked to about, like, hey, why did our relationship end? Please tell me how shitty I was.
Yeah.
And one of the things was that he didn't open up, and by the time that he like did manage to open up to her, like just put all of the emotional weight on her because he didn't talk to anyone else about it and only her.
Yeah.
And like that was really interesting because I'm like, oh, I can,
I'm 100%
in
relationships.
Like
yeah,
that.
Exactly. You can like really see it and you're like, oh, that's actually not necessarily worse, like really good that they're talking, but that one person can't hold like that emotional like burden. I don't want to say burden because that's like really shitty.
No, but it's a huge thing. No, it's
a burden.
Yeah,
it is a burden because that like whoever's carrying it, that's a massive burden.
Yeah,
especially if in Jack's case, like he was very depressed. Mm. Like it's his own burden.
Yeah,
but yeah, I've been broken up with because I unleashed the floodgates of an emotional like tormented experience. And the guy was like, I literally can't date you. Like, I just can't. I so much. Done.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, what? I can help you through. But really, I wouldn't have been able to at all.
Yeah.
He did me a massive favour.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting.
Because it's that thing of, like, once you get to that level with a guy, then they start being like, oh, I can talk about my feelings. And it's like, here are all my feelings from the past 25 years.
This is just like...
You're like, oh, God.
Yeah. He was like... Oh, and you've unleashed every single concern I have about this one topic, and I'm really deeply scarred.
Yeah.
Thus, we cannot work. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's interesting, because people do generally put the majority of their emotional burden upon their partner.
Yeah. And women do that too, because that's like...
I don't think women do so much. I think they do the deeper stuff, but I think the...
It's more shared.
Yeah, it's more shared.
I definitely put, like, the weight of my insecurities on my partner. So I'll put my problems on my friends. So I'll be like, oh, I don't know what to do with my career. Or like, oh, fucked up my bank balance, haven't I? Or like, what's going on about this? Or like, oh, I feel a bit fat. Like, all of that goes, like, disseminates to friends. Insecurity about, like, my own worth. I'm like, partner.
That's interesting.
Really. There's some stuff that I'm like those little things.
Yeah.
That, like, if
the solvable things.
That would just be like, that's not for Dan.
The things about my own insecurities that I don't talk to anyone about, especially not my partner, because I don't want them to see it in me.
Oh, really?
So I'm like, no, you don't want to point it out.
Liz.
Yeah, why would I do that?
You're like, have you noticed that I grow hair in the middle of my eyeballs? Like, oh my God, well now I've seen it. You're done.
Oh, physical stuff I don't care about. But it's more like actual like, oh, I'm really annoying. Like I won't be like, have you noticed how annoying I am all the time?
But I imagine like if you said that to your partner, you're like, oh, I feel like I'm an annoying person, and you're like, no, you're not.
Oh no, we're like we have the joke of like love is blind.
Love is blind, you are perfect.
It's true though.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Me and Craig now have a thing where if one of us is being too annoying for the other person, it's like a safe word. You have to go like this. And click on both ears, and they're like, okay, I'm turning.
I like that. You need to have safety mechanisms.
Sorry.
Now that we're talking about our boyfriends, because we, you know, podcast about masculinity, naturally, three women.
Now we're going to do a shit job,
aren't
we?
Now we're just talking about our boyfriends. Yeah. But the next episode, the mini-sode to kind of like be the companion for this one, is going to be our partners. Lena's partner, my partner, and Jazza as a fill-in for Lucy's partner.
So my boyfriend wasn't keen. He's severely dyslexic and is terrified of all of us.
But he was like, everyone's gonna make me and Hannah really so fucking stupid. Terrified.
This is one of the smartest guys I know. But yeah, he's just like, everyone made me feel so stupid. So,
but it's gonna be great.
That's okay.
Yeah, I did tell him. You know, he likes everyone.
He will be
likes. He likes the boys. Was about to name them both.
They've been named.
Oh, he likes Craig and Dan.
Yeah. Like, Craig Simmons UK, subscribe. I'm like jokingly trying to make him a mega star.
Promoting our boyfriend. We're only allowed to promote Ed Miliband.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so look out for that episode where Craig, Dan and Jazza will be discussing their own masculinities.
I think that'll be really interesting.
I'm so excited.
We're going to leave them alone and go to the pub and hope for the best.
we're going to go to the pub and work.
Yeah,
but we are going to go to the pub.
We are going to go to the pub and decide on the reading list for Banging Book Club 2018.
Yeah.
And by the time you're listening to this, we will have decided. Mm. So we will probably have tweeted it out. So go to our Twitter. Speaking of which, thank you for listening to this episode of Banging Book Club. Shall we do... final question, would you have sex with this book?
Yeah, I think it'd be very consensual and good.
I'd have really good sex with this book.
I'd be like best friends with this book. I'd be like, I already have a partner.
And competitive colleagues.
I like already have a partner who I have sex with and I like you, but not in that way.
I kind of already am having sex with this book. I think we all are.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
Woke men, in inverted commas, again on the woke.
Yeah.
Like educated feminist boys.
Yeah.
Well,
definitely.
Feminist in the way they behave. Yeah. I feel like Dan probably doesn't identify as feminist.
No, he does.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, sweet. No.
Dan, I don't know.
Can we make some predictions as to what they'll talk
about?
Yeah,
this is the thing. Like, okay, so Dan is going to go hard. Like, we didn't really talk about it in this episode, but I'm hoping that Dan goes hard into talking about the military stuff.
Maybe because we don't know that much about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Craig's going to talk about crying a lot because he cries all the time.
Dan doesn't cry and Dan hates crying.
Oh, God.
But I don't cry and I hate crying and I'm still feminine and but also not masculine.
I'm just so excited. And also, Jazza is a very politically engaged gay man. So I think that will be really
He has lots of body image as
he's
well.
He's very centrist, isn't he? In his political
Well,
views.
Yeah. He's pretty left, but he argues for the centre. Yeah. That's what I'd say about him. Yeah.
So, like, I think that would be a nice, interesting addition as an opinion. And Jazz is great. So my surrogate boyfriend, Jazza, will be here for us.
So going to consummate this.
Okay.
On anyway, that note.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Banging Book Club. Also, you may have heard we're doing a Christmas get-together on Thursday, the 14th of December at Travelling Through, which is a bookshop / bar near Waterloo in London. There may or may not be tickets still available when this episode comes out. Hopefully,
well,
you can
about
get
12.
Some. Yeah, so you can go online. We'll tweet the link and it'll be in the description of this podcast to the Eventbrite page where you can buy tickets. But there are cheaper tickets available if you can make it to the bookshop and buy tickets from them in person. Mm. That it's like 2-3 quid cheaper, like if you buy from them.
Because of online fees from like the booking agents. They're not just like, haha, you internet people.
So that will be a really great evening. We will be included in your ticket price is entry into the event, a free cocktail, because we'll be doing literary pun-based cocktails.
Oh, God, yeah.
And non-alcoholic
middle class.
Yeah, and a non-alcoholic one. And a copy of the first book that we are reading in January. So that will be included in your ticket price, and you'll get that in a little goodie bag, maybe. I mean, I don't know about the goodie bag, but
I'll buy
definitely
tissue
the book.
Paper.
Yeah. There's that housekeeping, and don't forget to rate us and subscribe and shit on iTunes.
Do the thing.
On that thing. How are we feeling, ladies?
I've got crab. So ill and tired.
Let's have a power nap.
Sick.
I know, right? I have no idea how coherent this episode is going to be, so we hope you enjoyed. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Big snogs.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.